Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Chedumun Aleph, 9 lines down. Ella Hadam Marova. We saw yesterday that Rova had a binyan av that he learned out of the word se, zebne av. That binyan av is koma kom shenemer se. Anytime the Torah uses the word se, enu elo lutzia to kilayim. It comes to exclude the possibility of kilayim. Yesterday we discussed the din by us, which is very shor o se by us. We also discussed the din by the korbanot, which is shor o kesef o eiz. And there we learned that by us, the O comes to be merabe the kilayim, to say that you are chayav, dalin chamesh, for kilayim. And the shor o kesef oeis, we learned yesterday that it comes to be mema'et, the kilayim, that you're not allowed to bring that down the mizbeach. But in each of those instances, you have a specific limud that is associated with it. You don't need this limud of rava. And that's why the Gemara here is asking, okay, so where does this binyan av of rava have impact, in that they said that he's learning from, whether it's Rashi from the Parshat Re'eh by Kashrut, Sek Savim and Seizim, or whether by the Belia Tosafot, who said it comes out of the Se by the Korban Pesach, Se Tamim, Zachar Ben Shana. So then, where is this useful, or where do we utilize it? So the Gemara says, if you are Kodoshim, if it's for Kodoshim, Behejuk Tibhu, Shor O Kesef O Eiz, that's what we learned yesterday already, Shor O Kesef Prat the Kilayim. From that word, oh, we learned that there was an exclusion of kilayim. Now, even though over here it says shor kesef o'ez, you don't have the word se appearing at all. So what's even the havamina that would be a problem? Rashi points out that in Bamidbar, with regards to the nisachim that you can bring as a nedava, over there the word se is used.
The pasuk says, kacha yaseh lashor ha'echad, o la'ayel ha'echad, o la'se ba'kivasim, Oba'izim.
And therefore we would be able to build that binyan av from the seh that is mentioned by the nisachim in Bamidbar. Ila maser, if we're asking about maser behema, that maser behema, if it's kilayim, would not work. Now, as Rashi points out once again, afagav delok tib beseh, even though the word seh doesn't appear by maser behema either, so then what's the havamina that Rova's din should have any application over here? Ella tzon kamar, the only thing I mentioned by Meister Behema tzon. Tachat, tachat, yalif mi kodoshim. That we learn out from a gzeirah shava from kodoshim.
Which is that in Emor it says, shor o kesef o eiz kivaleid, v'yashivat yamim tachat imo, v'yom ha-shmini, v'hala yeratzeh kurban yishel Hashem.
So over there, the term tachat imo is used with the gzeirah shava to the pasuk that is found by Maaser, where it says,
Mechom ma'asar bakar v'tzon, kol asher yavor tachat ha-shavet, hasiri iya kodesh la'ashem.
The word tachat is used by ma'aser v'ema, the word tachat is used by kodeshim. That gzeirah shava is a gzeirah shava from which we learn many things by ma'aser v'ema from kodeshim. Amongst them, Rashi would suggest here is that association with Hekdesh opens up the possibility that the word tzon that is written over here by Maaser will have the same meaning as it does by Kodoshim, which means it includes the word Seh. So it's as if Seh is written over here. But it'll also be the solution, which is the fact that there is such a Gzer Shava, means that just like by Kodoshim that it is Pasul Kilayim, so too over here by Maaser Behema it will be considered to be Pasul. The Tosafot quotes a Rashi that says that Tzon has the word Seh subsumed in it. And that's how Rashi learned it. That's not what the Rashi in front of us says. But the Balei Tosafot Rashi is saying that the word tzon subsumes within it the word seh. Tosafot, on the other hand, gives a third possibility as to what the explanation over here is. He says, "Perush Davi ki iluktiv beiseh migzer shavad havara havara mi bechor dichtiv beiseh." That it is a gzer shava from bechor because of the word havara that is used. And since the word havara is used here, and havara is also used by the Meiser Behema, because by Bechor it says, Vavarta kol peret peto rechem la'ashem. Mamaser it says, Kol asher yavor tachat ha-shevet asriya kodesh la'ashem. So again, three possibilities of how we get the word seh by Meiser Behema. Either according to the Tosafot quoting Rashi, the word tzon subsumes within it seh. The other possibility is Tosafot who says that the Gzer Sheva, the Gemara is about to discuss about Havara, that we learn from Bechor from Meiser Behema. It's a two-way street. And just like we learn Bechor from Meiser Behema will be learned from Bechor, and it's as if it's written the word Seh. That is written by Bechor is also written by Meiser Behema. Rashi says, Tachat Tachat, that we have a tremendous amount of Limudim that come from Meiser Behema, from Kodoshim, from Gzeir Shava of Tachat Tachat.
The Gemara nevertheless concludes, Ilam Maaser Behema, Tachat Tachat Yalif Mi Kodoshim. That we're going to learn from Kodoshim. Just like by Kodoshim, we find that Kilayim are precluded because of the word O. So too, Maaser Behema will learn from Kodoshim, and also over there, we're going to say that Kilayim are precluded from the din of Maaser Behema. Then the Gemara says, okay, so we don't need it for that. Either Bechor, if a Bechor Havara, Havara, Yalifri Maaser. This is what Tosafot just quoted, that this Gezer Sheva between Bechor of Avarta Kol Peter Rechem Lashem, and that is which is found by Maaser Behema, Kol Sheyavor Tachat Hashevet, the Sriya Kodesh Lashem, that Havara, Havara, that Gezer Sheva, will teach us just like by Maaser, there is no Kilayim, or Kilayim is not allowed. So too by Bechor, there's no Kedushat Bechor, by Kilayim. Inami, Nidme Amar, to load Dichtiv, Ach Bechor Shor, Achehu Shor Ubechoro. So the other possibility is that we don't learn out Bechor from Maaser Behema, but rather we learn it out from itself, which is, it says, Ach Bechor Shor, Achehu Shor Ubechoro Shor. Until it itself is a shor, and the firstborn is a shor. So that tells you that it can't be a nidmeh, because you need to have the mother be a shor, and you need the child to be a shor. Kilayim miboy. If you already precluded nidmeh, where the animal is a shor, it just doesn't look like a shor, then certainly kilayim should be precluded over here, because kilayim is a totally different behema, it's a mixed breed. So we learn it out from the kal v'chomer, that just like by sure, we have a specific pasuk that eliminates nidmeh, so too, it will eliminate kilayim. As Tosafot points out over here, this miut that says that by ach bechor shor, that teaches you that a nidmeh is not kadosh b'kdushat bechora, is dafka sheno domeh klau, aval domeh v'miksat simanim yalifatam miach tekadish b'bechor. That's only when the offspring looks nothing like the mother. But if it looks at least somewhat like the mother, then there's a ribuy from the word ach that says that that is kadosh bibechora. And that is why you need both a miut by kodoshim as well as a miut by bechor. Because if you only had the miut by kodoshim, I would be excluded even in the case where the animal looks similar to its mother. And that's not true by bechor. And if I only had the miut by bechor, which told me that things that are dome to the mother are considered kadosh b'bechora, things that are totally different are not, then I would have applied that to kodoshim and said that kodoshim are just like bechor. Because we have this gzeir shava, as we noted before, between kodoshim and the bechor, and therefore the Torah had to specify in each instance, first of all, by kodoshim, that a nidmet is pasul no matter how much it looks like its mother. And by the case of bechor, it makes a difference that if it looks somewhat like the mother, then it's kadosh b'bechora. If it looks nothing like the mother, then it's not kadosh b'bechora. Now we have tried with three different possibilities about where we're speaking about kodoshim, maaser behema, bechor, and none of those have been relevant, because each one of them has a specific limud that tells us what we need to do in that case. Elikit mar de rova linyan peter chamor. Rova was said about a peter chamor, which is that a peter chamor, the firstborn chamor, has to be redeemed by a seh. That seh that you used to redeem, that seh has to be a seh that is not kilayim. It has to be a real seh. Kedinan, podim lo be'egel, velo be'chaya, velo be'shchuta, velo be'trefa, velo be'kilayim, velo be'koy. So here you have a Mishnah that corroborates what Rova is saying, which is that you cannot redeem the peter chamor, not with an egel, not with a calf, lo be'chaya, not with a wild animal, not that's not a behema, velo be'shchuta, not something that's shechted, it has to be a live seh, velo be'trefa, it has to be a seh that is not a trefa, below b'kilayim, and it's said that it's not a mixed breed. Below b'koy, koy is also, there's a machloket in the Gemara and Chulin as to what exactly a koy is. Rashi over here says that it's a mixed breed between a behema and a chaya. Even though technically there is an ability to breed over here, and maybe it would not be deemed to be kilayim, nevertheless it would be precluded the koy. That's how Rashi explains it. In the Gemara and Chulin, there's other opinions as to what a koy is, that a koy is an animal where they couldn't determine whether it was a behema or a chaya. Not that necessarily it was a mixed breed. Or, it was the last possibility that it was koi as a birya b'fnei atzma, its own creation. But Rashi, obviously to make it make sense in this context, says that it seems that the Mishnah over here is indicating that it's a crossbreed between a behemah and chaya, which the Gemara and Chulin notes is a crossbreed between a tzvi and an eiz, between a deer and a she-goat, or between a goat and a doe. You would have thought maybe it's relevant because of the tzad izim shibo. The answer is, according to Rashi, that it's not relevant because of the tzad chaya shibo. And we said before that a chaya is precluded, a chaya being like an ayal and a tzvi. Therefore, kilayim is precluded. That is a mixed breed between a behema and a behema. And a koi is precluded, which is a mixed breed between a behema and a chaya. So in all of these instances, they do not qualify it as a seh, either because it's called a seh only when it's alive. It's also only called a seh when it's either from the kvasim or from the izim. If it is a mixed breed, or it comes from a chaya, none of those qualify as a seh ksavim or a seh izim, and therefore they cannot be used to redeem the peter chamor. Ole Rabbi Elazar de Matir Bikilaim. According to Rabbi Elazar, who says that kilaim can be used, it's not Rabbi Elazar Matir Bikilaim ipnu shehu seh. A kilaim works because it's called a seh. Lamai hilkota. Then what is Rabbi's din useful for in that case? Interesting part about this Gemara is Rabbi Elazar is a Tano. So Rabbi Elazar doesn't have to agree with Rava at all. He doesn't have to have the same din as Rava, and he doesn't need to find a way for Rava's din to be relevant, because Rabbi Elazar believes that it is mutar bikilayim, and whatever Rava's an amora, Rava's got to work out his issues. It's funny or interesting that the Gemara here is asking within the Shita of Rabbi Elazar, how do we make Rava work? So the Pnei Yeshua explains over here that, of course, Rabbi Elazar does not have to conform to Rava or Rava's limud, but by the fact that Rava is showing that the word seh is miyutar, is extraneous in the pasuk, therefore Rabbi Elazar has to do something with that extraneous seh. So if he doesn't hold like Rava, he must do something else with it. So we have to find out what Rabbi Elazar uses the word seh for, or if he does subscribe to Rava's din and using of seh, where does he apply it, or where does it manifest itself? And that's the nature of the question of the Gemara here, of how does Rabbi Elazar fit into Rava's Shito. That we use it for a Tamei that is born from a Tahor. That is a non-kosher animal that is born from a kosher animal. The iburo min a tamei, and that birth was caused through a tamei. Udalo ke Rabbi Yeshua, and that's not like Rabbi Yeshua. Di Rabbi Yeshua misek savim vse izim nafkele. That he learned that out from the pasuk of sek savim vse izim nafkele. Ache aviv keves vimo kivsa. So that's the shita of Rabbi Yeshua. So the way that Rashi explains this situation is, if you have a tamei shenolad min a tahor para. He gives a case here. It's a parashel das sus. A cow gave birth to a horse. Vaviv sus, and the father is a horse. So you have a horse and a cow that crossbred, and they give birth to a horse. Or he gives the other options, Rachel shel da chazir. You have a ewe that gave birth to a pig, and the father is a pig. Da asur ba'achila. That offspring that is born here cannot be eaten. Tichtiv zot beima shetochvelu. Shor sek savim. Comes to exclude the case of kilayim in this case. So Rabbi Elazar will use the word of seh that is found in the pasuk, similar to the way that Rava learns it. This is where he'll apply the limud of Rava. That seh means to the exclusion of kilayim. That means that you're allowed to eat kosher animals. You're not allowed to eat animals that are a product of a crossbreeding. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua learns that out from Sek Savim and Se'izim. He learns out the fact that its mother and father must be a Seh in order for it to be Kasher. If it's not that way, then it's not Kasher, and he doesn't use this Limud of Rava. And then the Gemara says a very more basic question, which is, Utuhora mitmeya mima'abro. Since when can a Tahor animal crossbreed with a Tmei animal, kosher and non-kosher animal crossbreed? And then you have a child or an offspring, which is, quote-unquote, not kosher. So, in, yes, the kaimelon, the aber mikalut, kirabi shimon. The case here is that it's not really a real tamei animal. It's an animal that is deemed to be tamei by Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon believes that if you have an animal that's born from kosher parents, but the animal that's born has features of a non-kosher animal, then that animal is tamei, you cannot eat it. And that's what Rashi explains over here. Kalot parsutav. If it has closed hooves, it has hooves like a horse, not split hooves. But it was born to animals that are split hoof animals, and it just happens to be that there's some sort of defect in this animal, and that defect leads it to have a siman that is not kosher. So Rabbi Shimon calls an animal like that tamei. And since he calls that animal tamei, even though its parents are kosher parents, the product of that union produces something that is tamei. Then, if that animal that is a kalut, or a quote-unquote tamei animal, then breeds with another animal of its type, then you have parents that are tamei and tahor, according to Rabbi Shimon. The animal born of that union is going to be classified as kilayim. And since it's classified as kilayim, that is what will be precluded in this instance. So here Rashi explains, the Tanya b'Bechorot, we have a Braita in Bechorot. Rabbi Shimon Omer, gamal, gamal, shnei pe'amim. The word gamal appears twice in the psukim. Achat gamal anulad min gamala. One is a gamal born from a mother who is a gamal. V'achat gamal anulad min parah. And one is for a gamal that's born from a parah. V'afilu a'ibarto min tahor. Even if it was given birth from a tahor parent, Mishor Gamur ka'asar le Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says it's asur. Upalig ale Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. Heicha dibarto min ha-tahor. If it was pregnant from a tahor, Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. Mishor she'enu kalut umatiro b'siman achad shel tahara. Rabbi Yeshua says as long as it has one siman tahara, then the animal is classified as tehora. So you have here, according to Rashi, a machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yeshua, as to what is the status of this animal that is born from kosher parents, and then it shows a siman that is of a non-kosher animal. According to Rabbi Yoshua, that animal would be kasher, because as long as it has one siman that is similar to the parents, that's enough to make it into a kosher animal, according to Rabbi Yoshua. So either it's malet gera, or it has a split hoof, it has one of those two features, that's enough to be classified as kasher, according to Rabbi Yeshua. And he learns this out from a gamal, when the Torah tells us you can't eat a gamal ki malei geirahu uparsata venu mafris, because it does chew its cud, but it doesn't have split hooves. Rabbi Yeshua says, the pasuk is minduyak, that only this animal with one siman is considered to be not kasher. But there's another animal with one siman that is considered to be kasher. And that is an animal that is a product of both kosher parents, but it is missing one of the simanim. According to Rabbi Shimon, that doesn't matter. If it doesn't look like the parents, and it looks like a non-kosher animal, it's showing features of a non-kosher animal, that is considered to be non-kosher. Then, if that animal goes ahead and breeds, cross-breeds with a kosher animal, then according to both Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon, that animal that is born of that union is problematic. Rabbi Yeshua says it's problematic because the animal went together with a tahor, and it does not have a pure breed. It's not a six savim and a se izim. The animal that's born has to come from a kevis and a kibsa, and that's not what we have over here. We don't have a kevis and a kibsa. So even though technically the animal is kasher, when it crossbreeds with an animal of its type or its species, and then gives birth to another animal, that animal that is born is considered to be a animal that is not born of parents of the same species. And so because of that, it will be problematic. And that's what Rashi says here, Klomar. You would think, since the animal itself is kasher, it'd also be machshir, the child born to it. Rova learns that din, learns this. So now you have three different opinions over here. You have Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon believes that the animal that is born from a union of the same species but shows signs of a tamei, that animal itself is tamei. The child that is born is tamei, and you may not eat it. It's osur be'achila. That animal that's osur be'achila, if it mates with another animal, that is a tamei getting together with a tahor. That is classified as kilayim, and the child that is born is kilayim and precluded because of kilayim. That is the way that Rabbi Shimon learns. Preclusion that Rabbi Shimon has is also learnt by Rabbi Elazar, Derech Robo, which is the limud of se, that teaches that only a se, and anytime you have the word se, it means se and not kilayim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua, who believes that the parent, the animal that is born with at least one siman similar to its parents, that animal is kasher. But then when it breeds with its own species and has a child, that child born of that union will not be kasher because it will not qualify as a se kvasim and se izim. And so for that reason, it's problematic. So everybody agrees that the child born is problematic. It's either problematic because of kilayim, or it's problematic because of the pasuk of se kvasim and se izim. So So that would be the explanation for, first of all, Rava's usage, according to Rabbi Elazar, who says that Kilayim is mutar by Pidyon Peter Chamor. He'll utilize it over here by the din of Kashrut, basically under the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, who says that the animal or the parent is Tameh. Since the parent is Tameh, the union between the Tameh and the Tahor is Kilayim, and that's why the child or the offspring is problematic. Rabbi Shua disagrees and says that that parent is Kasher to eat, but agrees that if it was a union between that animal and another animal, the child born of that problematic animal, for him, which is kosher to eat, that child born, according to Rabbi Yeshua, would also be problematic, because it doesn't qualify as sekva simen seizim. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara. The Balei Tosafot have major issues with this Ishita of Rashi. First of all, he says, Perish Bekuntris, the Rabbi Yeshua, Poliga Rabbi Shimon. Machloket here is between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Shimon. And he says, Bekula Sugya de Bechorot o Meshtama ki Perusho. The entire Sugya in Bechorot doesn't sound anything like what Rashi is explaining. Elamashman, the Mode Rabbi Yeshua, the Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbi Yeshua agrees with Rabbi Shimon. The Gamal Gamur, Hanulan mi Parao Mishor Shua Sur. Vim Yeshbo Siman Achad Shidomeb Mitzah de Parao Mutar. Velokai Kalala Simanim Dekroa. It's not about Simane Kashrut, Mimale Gerao Mafrise Parsa, but rather it's talking about the physical appearance of the animal. And in addition, he says, Mash Mahotam, the time of the Rabbi Yeshua, the reason behind Rabbi Yeshua's position is Mimtasov Mikasover Zev Ze Gorem Masur. It's because when you have two parties and one of the Gormim is a problematic Gorem, both of them are contributory factors, and the product born from that union is problematic. Not like what Rashi is suggesting over here. So for that reason, Tosafot thinks that Rashi's explanation is very problematic. So in the end, Rashi's explanation revolves around the fact that Rabbi Yeshua is not really speaking about the same inyan of Pidyon Peter Chamor as Rabbi Elazar. He's speaking about this totally different issue about the animal that is born with one siman similar to its parents. And all we're saying is, Deloka Rabbi Yeshua doesn't mean that Rava necessarily argues on Rabbi Yeshua. They just argue about the limud, or the source for the limud. So there's not a fundamental halachic argument between them, just an argument about what the source is. And when the Gemara says, Deloka Rabbi Yeshua, it means that Rava's limud is used by Rabbi Elazar. And that's not like Rabbi Yeshua, who uses a different limud of Sek Savim and Sek Izim. Most of the Rishonim don't like that, and mainly because of the Gemara says, with the local Rabbi Yeshua, sounds like he doesn't hold halachically like Rabbi Yeshua. And therefore, they explain that this issue of Rabbi Yeshua, or the din of Rabbi Yeshua, is also speaking about a pidyon peter chamor, and Rava holds like Rabbi Elazar, and not like Rabbi Yeshua, which is Rava Sofer Kabbalah Lozer that says that a kalut is mutar ba'achila. And that's why you have to have a special limud to tell you that you can't use it for pidyon peter chamor. But Rabbi Yeshua, who thinks that it's osur ba'achila akalut, you don't need a limud to tell you that it is asur to use it as a pidyon for peter chamor. So that's the way that most of the Rishonim learn it. And the way that the Tosfot explains again, that the machloket here between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar revolves around whether the animal is kasher. Rabbi Elazar thinks the animal is kasher, then needs a specific limud to teach you that you can't use it for pidyon peter chamor. Then Rabbi Yeshua says that it's problematic to eat it. He then doesn't need a special pasuk to teach you that you don't use it to be poda a pidyon peter chamor. And that's what it means, the local Rabbi Yeshua. Rava is subscribing to the position Rabbi Elazar that it's mutar ba'achila. And based on that, he needs his limud, but Rabbi Yeshua doesn't have it being mutar ba'achila. Clearly disagrees with Rava because he won't need the limud at all. By Rava. Rava has this question. Hare alai ola. An individual says, makes a nether that he's going to bring a korban ola. Be free short. And then he separates out his short, nice big ola that he's going to bring for his ola. Ba'acher b'ganav. And then the thief walks off with it. So now he doesn't have his ola. The balim are going to have to replace it. But then the ganav decides to do tshuva. He already got rid of the shor, he did whatever he did with the shor, and now he wants to make amends with this balim. The truth is that he stole from the balim, he stole a korban from them, but he didn't really steal something that was necessarily monetary worth to the balim. Because as far as the balim are concerned, they have an obligation to bring an ola. What type of ola is not defined in their statement? That means that what the ganav needs to do is replace the ola. And that's the nature of the question over here. Mi patar ganav nafshe bekeves l'rabbanan ubalotahov l'rabbelazar ben Azaria. So machlok between the Rabbanan and Rabbelazar ben Azaria in the Gemara in Manachot as to when a person uses the stam generic term ola, do they mean only an olat behema? And therefore the lowest olat behema or the smallest olat behema that you can bring is a keves, and that's what the Rabbanan think. Or does when a person says the word ola, he includes in that terminology not just behemot, but also ofot, birds. And therefore Rabbi Lazar ben Azaria believes that when you said arei alai ola, there's a possibility that he could bring a bird as the ola. So now this thief comes back to the owner and says, listen, I got you covered. I'm going to return you the ola. And he hands him a keves. Or according to Rabbi Lazar ben Azaria, he hands him a bird and says, here's your ola back. Is that sufficient to cover whatever he did here? Now, as Rashi explains over here, in terms of the theft from the Balim, you stole an Ola. As long as you replace it with something that's an Ola, you make amends with the Balim. As far as the remainder, meaning the differential between the shore and the bird, or the shore and the keves, that's theft from Hekdesh. That theft from Hekdesh you're not going to pay for because of the din of Re'eu. You don't pay Hekdesh when you steal from Hekdesh. As Rashi notes over here, this is a Libet to Rabbi Shimon that says, Kodashim, that you are Makdish where you have Achrayut, which is the case here because it said Neder, that that's a davara gorem the mamon. So the davara gorem the mamon, the ganav is responsible towards the balim for, and that's what he's trying to replace over here. That monetary loss that he's generating by taking away the korban that was set aside by the balim, that he's trying to replace. That he can replace with any animal that will discharge the neder's obligation. Once he's done that, then whatever residual difference there is between what the individual would have brought and that was stolen versus what the ganav is returning, that's a loss to Hekdesh, and that he does not have to replace, he doesn't have to pay for. So that's the question here. Is it sufficient for him to give him a lower level of Ola in order to discharge the obligation? It's not. Harei alai Ola, person who makes a nether to bring an Ola, Yavi Keves. Chamim said that at minimum he has to bring a Keves. Elazar ben Azaria Omer, Yavi Toro ben Yonah. At minimum he has to bring a bird, he can even bring a bird at that minimal level. My. Do we say, look, he just said the word or generic Ola. So now, no matter what type of Ola gets to the Mizbeach, he's discharged his obligation. And that's what the Ganav is saying. Listen, I took something that ruined your ability to discharge your obligation. I'm going to replace it with something that does discharge your obligation. It's not exactly like what you were bringing, but it still discharges your obligation. Is that sufficient? Oh, Dilma Matzi Amarle, or maybe the Balim can say to the Ganav, Ana mitzvah min amufchar be'ina l'me'evot. I really wanted to do the best mitzvah possible. And now you stole from me the ability to do a mitzvah min amufchar. You've got to replace it and allow me to do the mitzvah min amufchar. So Batar Deibai, after he posed the question, other pashat, he concluded, Ganav, patar etzmo bekeves, the Rabbanan, balata of the Rabbanan ben Azaria. He says definitely, yes, that the Ganav can give back whatever it is that he wants to give him in order to discharge the obligation of Ola, he doesn't have to replace the exact same korban that he stole. Rav Acha b'Rei Ravika matni lav hedya, he had this statement said explicitly, Amar Rova, rather than a query, and then Rova answering the question, rather it was a statement of Rova, Harei olai ola v'yifrish shor, uba acher v'gnavo, patar etzmo bekeves l'rabbanan uvelat ta'of l'rabbelazer ben Azaria. Makes that statement that if he is mafrish a shor to discharge his obligation of the nether ola, and then the individual steals it, the thief can replace it with a keves, according to the chachamim, or with birds, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and that'll be sufficient in order to discharge the obligation. Again, he does have a deficit vis-a-vis Hekdesh, but can't pay for that because there's no obligation to pay when one steals from Hekdesh. As far as his obligation to Hekdesh, yeah, it's clear here that he doesn't have to pay for Kefel, or for Arba v'chamisha because of the miutim, whether it's Re'eu or Begonevi Beitaish. But as far as the keren of the animal that Hekdesh loses out on, here the Raivud, as well as some other Achronim, discuss as to whether he is considered to be a mazik vis-a-vis Hekdesh for the keren, and therefore he would be obligated to replace the full animal vis-a-vis Hekdesh, even though for the Baalim he only has to replace the possible loss that he would have caused, which would be the unfulfillment of the nether. And there he can use a lower or minimal amount to fulfill the obligation and bring an ola. But vis-a-vis Hekdesh, she's going to have to make up for that differential and replace the animal completely or they're caring completely for Hekdesh. And the obvious nafkamina will be, if he is caught as a ganav, he only pays kefil vis-a-vis the amount that he owes to the Balim, and not kefil in the amount that he owes to Hekdesh. All right, next Mishnah. Micharo chutz miachad mimeah shebo. He sells it, but he lives over residual ownership of 1%. O shaita lo bo shutafut. Or he was a partner in the animal. When he stole it from his partner. Hashochet v'nitnav labiyado. If he shechs it, but it becomes a nevela before he's able to do the shechita. Hanocher, someone who kills the animal through nechira, which is a tearing of the front of the animal by cutting it from its nose down to the heart area. V'ameaker, or someone who is oker the simanim instead of cutting them like you're supposed to for shechita. Mishalem tashlumei kefil. In all of these instances, he pays kefil. Ve'en mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha. But in all those instances, he does not pay 4 or 5 times because there's a failure in the shechita in all of these cases. In the latter cases, it's because he didn't do a shechita at all. Here, even the chachamim agreed that this is not a shechita. Rabbi Shimon says if it's a shechita she'en ruya, it's not a shechita. The chachamim disagree with that. But in certain instances, like here, where you do nechira, or you me'aker, that's not shechita at all. You killed the animal, that's not shechita. And if it's a shochet, you need navla biyado, became a nevela. If it was a proper shechita, then the shechita is mitaher in the nevela, and it wouldn't be mitamei ke nevela. So he did something wrong in the shechita that made it into a nevela. He wasn't even successful with that shechita. Here the chachamim agree, don't have a shechita at all. In the first two cases, the fact that either he has residual ownership in it, or the fact that he was a partner in this animal to start with, that goes back to what something we learned before, which is it has to be tivacho, which is kulo bi'isur be'ina. You have to shech the animal completely bi'isur. And similarly, micharo has to be a complete sale of the item, a complete sale bi'isur. And that is lacking here because he has a partial ownership in the animal. So now the Gemara says, my chutz mi'chad mi'me'ah shebo. What does it mean that he left over 1%? What does it mean that he left a residual ownership in it? So Amar Rav, chutz mi'davar ni'tari mo b'shchita. So Rav says it has to be something that the shchita causes to be mutar. So for instance, basar. Basar is something that before the shchita is not mutar, after the shchita is mutar. So it has to be something that the shchita changes the status of the item for. So he has to leave over 1% ownership, or small ownership, it's something that is affected by the shechita. But Levi Amar, chutz mikizota. Levi says it doesn't matter. Even if you say, with the exception of its shearings, the shearings aren't affected by the shechita, whether you shear it before, after the shechita, with the shechita, without the shechita, makes no difference. Levi just says you have to leave over some residual. Any residual left over, that's enough. V'chein tanya b'matnita. And we have a braita that is supportive of Levi's position, chutz mikizota, similar to what Levi said. Meitevei. Michara chutz miyada, chutz miragla, chutz mikarna, chutz migizota. He sells it with the exception of its arm, its leg, its horns, its shearings. Einu mishalem teshlumei arba v'chamisha. According to the Chachatam Tanakama, any residual that is left over, you pay 4 or 5 times for. That sounds very much like Levi. Rabbi Omer, davar me'akev b'shchita, einu mishalem teshlumei arba v'chamisha. Something that would prevent the shechita from being a good shechita, then you do not pay 4 or 5 times. B'she'enu me'akev shechita, something that would not ruin the shechita, b'shalev tashlumei arba v'chamisha, then you would pay 4 or 5 times. So, if the residual ownership in the animal includes an item that would make it that the animal was already a nevela before you started the shechita, Rashi says, then that would be considered to be a residual here. Or what Rashi describes as, it's a nevela while it's still alive. And therefore the shechita will have no impact on the animal whatsoever. If it's something that does not make the animal a nevela, even if it makes it a trefa, that's not enough to make it that you have residual ownership over here. And therefore if you shecht it, you will be chayav arba v'chamisha. There are rishonim who believe that this even references items that make the animal into a trefa. But then that complicates the attribution of this Mishnah as to whether it's really the Chachamim or the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. So again, for Rabbi, it has to be something that if you took it away, it would make it an Nevela Mechayim. That is what you have to have residual ownership in order to prevent you from having to be paid 4 or 5 times. Shimon Lazomer, Chutz Mikarna, Enu Mishalem Teshlumei Arba V'Chamisha. If he excludes the Keren, then he doesn't pay 4 or 5 times. Chutz mikizotev excludes the shearings, mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Then he does pay 4 or 5 times. Bishlama lelevi, for Levi, we understand he's ketana kama. Elo the Rav, come on. Who's Rav gonna hold like? Rav can't hold like any of these Tanaim that are in the Braita that we just brought. The Tana Kama sounds like Levi, which is that no matter what you leave out, that's okay. That gives you the Ptur from the Arba of Chamisha. Rambi says it has to be something that makes an Avela Michayim in order to be Ptur mi Arba of Chamisha. Otherwise, you're Chayav in Arba of Chamisha. It's not about what the Shechita is Matir or not Matir. It's what prevents the Shechita from being effective or not being effective. And then, Rabbi Shimon Elazar differentiates between horns and shearings, neither of which have any impact from the Shechita. So then, there's no Tana here that premises the Arba Chamisha on something that's Nitara Yedei Shechita. So Amri Rav Damar Ki Hai Tana. Rav holds like this bright. The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Mechara Chutz Mi Yadaf, he sold it with the exception of its arm, Chutz Mi Ragla, or the exception of its leg. Einu mishalem tashlumei arba chamisha. He doesn't pay 4 or 5 times. Chutz mikarna, chutz migizotah, the exception of its horns or its shearings, mishalem tashlumei arba chamisha. So here you see Rabbi Shimon Elazar, and this braita is like Rav, which is that things that are nitara yedei shechita, that's considered residual, that's why the arm and the leg are residuals. On the other hand, the shearings and the horns, which have nothing to do with the shechita, those aren't considered to be residual ownership that would prevent you from having to pay 4 or 5 times. We have 4 different opinions over here. What is their shorish amachloket? What explains the difference in their opinions? Now, obviously, we'll have to reconcile between Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, because there's 2 brachot that mention Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar with different opinions. Tana kama savar utivacho kula ubeinan. You have to shecht it entirely. Umicharo kula ubeinan. And you have to sell it entirely. So, just like by shechita, you have to do a full-fledged shechita, so too by mechira, you have to do a full-fledged mechira. That means any residual ownership that you leave over in it, that's not a full mechira. And that's why he says that you're patur from Arba Chamisha if you leave over any residual ownership, like Levi. Rabbi Savar, utuvacho, midi dehavi atvicha, lafuke midi, tolavi bitvicha, to exclude things that have nothing to do with shechting. Umicharo, dumya detvicha. And therefore, mechira, the selling, is similar to Tvicha. We'll learn from Tvicha to Mechira. And just like by Tvicha, if there's something that is missing that would make it that it's no longer a Shechita, then you would not be Chayav for Tvicha. The Hekesh between Tvicha to Mechira makes it that that absence in the ownership or in the sale is something that will also make it that it's not a Mechira to be Chayav Dalet Vehei. So the Tvicha, the Shechita, is the Koveya here. Something that would be classified as shechita, then whatever residual you have is not considered to be a residual for shechita. That same threshold we use for mechira. If you have a residual like that, that will not prevent it from being considered or classified as a mechira. Shimon Elazar savar karna delo lemigza kaima abi shiur. A horn which is not normally taken off the animal, that's considered residual ownership that has impact. Veinu mishalem tashlumei arba v'chamisha, and therefore you don't pay 4 or 5 times. The whole point of the wool is to shear it, and therefore since it's omeid to be sheared, lo havi shiur, that's not considered to be leftover ownership, since by design it's going to be taken off anyway. Therefore, mishalem tashlumei arba chamisha, that's the residual ownership that you have left in it. V'idach tana de Rabbi Shimon Elazar savar, the other tana de Rabbi Shimon Elazar who holds, like Rav holds, yadav raglav, ditzrichei tvicha havi shiur. The yadav raglav that are things that need tvicha, that is considered to be a shiur. Velo mishalem tashlumei arba chamisha. Karnev gizotah, lo tzrichei tvicha, that don't need tvicha, lo vishiur. That's not considered to be a residual with regards to the mechira. Now, kasha de Rabbi Shimon Elazar, de Rabbi Shimon Elazar. You have 2 opinions within Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Shrei tanaim, alibet de Rabbi Shimon Elazar. That's not a problem. We have 2 tanaim that are quoting Rabbi Shimon Elazar, and they had different views as to what Rabbi Shimon Elazar's opinion was. Alright, Tan Rabbanan. Hagonev, hakita'at, vetachigeret, vetasuma. An individual steals an animal that is missing a foreleg, or is missing a hind leg, or is blind. V'chen hagonev behemat hashutafim. Or he steals an animal from a shutaf. Chayav. In all those cases, he is chayav. Shutafim shiganvu. Partners that steal turim. They are exempt, they do not need to pay. Va'atanya shutafim shiganvu chayavim. Don't we have a braita that says partners who steal are responsible, do have to pay? So in all these cases here, you would have a hava mina that you should not be chayav for stealing because you didn't sell the whole animal. In the case of the kitat, the chigeret, and the suma, you didn't sell a whole animal. The answer in the end is whatever you stole, you sold. Since you sold everything that you stole, therefore you're chayav for the mechira over here, even though there's something missing from the animal. And so you're going to be chayav for gonev mocher, despite the fact that there is something missing from the animal. Because in the case where you stole it from the two partners, when you shechted it, you shechted the whole thing, kulo be'isur. And since you were completely chayav at the time that the act happened, that makes you chayav in chamisha five times. And that'll be five times, whether it's to one partner or to both partners. Then we come to the shutavim. We have partners who steal. In one case, you have a breita that says they are pturim. In one case, you have a breita that says chayavim. Amar Rav Nachman lo kasha, kan b'shutaf sheganav mechavero, kan b'shutaf sheganav me'alma. The question that you pose, David, that's the answer that Rav Nachman gives. Depends what partner he's stealing from. If he's stealing from his partner, then he is patur, because he owns half the animal. Since he owns half the animal, when he steals it, he can't really be chayav for the tvicha and the mechira, because he's selling the something that he's owned. It's not kulo b'isur. On the other hand, when we're shutafim, partners that steal from a third party, over there, they're going to be chayavim, because they both participated in the theft, and therefore you're going to be chayavim. That's the way the Rav Nachman explains it. Eitve Rova the Rav Nachman. Rova challenges Rav Nachman and says, Yochol shutaf shganav mechavero, v'shutafin shganvu yuhu chayavim. He brings a braita that seems to disagree with the distinction that Rav Nachman just drew. He says, you would think that a shutaf shganav mechavero, that means a partner that stole from his other partner, meaning that he stole from his 50% partner, v'shutafim shganvu, or partners that steal. You would think both of those are chayavim. Tamalomar utivacho kulo be'ina and veleka. You have to shecht the entirety of the thing, and that is lacking over here. So from Robo's bright over here, it makes no difference as to whether you stole from your partner, or as partners you stole from a third party. In either of those cases, you're not going to be chayav because you lack tivacho kulo. That you can't do a complete shchita in that instance. Because in the instance where you're stealing from your partner, you own half of it. Or when you're a partner with a thief, the thief that you stole with is a 50% owner. When you shecht it, you're only shechting your half of it, but you don't have the other guy's permission or participation in the shchita. Al amar of Nachman lo kasha, kan b'shutaf shedafach ledat chavero, kan b'shutaf shedafach shelo ledat chavero. So Rashi explains over here, it depends on whether his partner in crime knows that he's doing the shechita. Remember that we learned before that there is a shliach, the devar aveira, when it comes to the devicha. So therefore, if these two partners steal together, and then one of them shechs it with the knowledge of the other partner, or on behalf, or the request of the other partner, then they are chayavin for dalet v'hei, because then it's devacho kulo. Because he shechted his portion of it, plus he had permission, or he was made into a shaliach to shecht the partner's piece of it. The other hand, if he shechts it unbeknownst to his partner thief, then they do not have a tevacho kulo, because he shechted his portion of it, but he did not have permission, or he wasn't made into a shaliach to shecht the other portion of it. And so because of that, they're not going to be chayav dalet v'hei in that case. Now, even though, as we learned before in the Masechta, we had a question as whether it's only four or five times. Or what happens in a case of shutafim when you steal from partners, and it's stealing from the partners, one of those partners, whatever reason, you're patur, because you were modeh b'knas. Over there we said that you pay chamisha chatzei bakar, and not just chamisha bakar. That even if you pay 50% times five, you're going to pay for it. So why don't we say the same thing over here? Where he shechts a portion of it that is his, even though he's not shechting the other portion that he's shechting, he doesn't have permission to shecht from the other thief. Nevertheless, for his portion, he should be a chayav five times. In that he should be chayav 50% five times, just like the case where he stole from partners and admitted to one of the partners, he's chayav to pay the other partner five times the 50%. Rashi says the cases are not comparable. Because in the case where you stole it from the two partners, when you shechted it, you shechted the whole thing, kulo b'isur. That was done totally b'isur. Then after the fact, your hoda'ah, your admission, exempts you from payment to one of the shutafim. But that means that when the act happened, you were completely chayav. And since you were completely chayav at the time that the act happened, that makes you chayav in chamisha 5 times. And that'll be 5 times, whether it's to one partner or to both partners or 50% or the whole amount. Over here, the problem is at the moment of shechita, you do not have it kula b'isur. Either because you're stealing from your other partner and it's partially yours, and if you don't have the tmicha b'kula b'isur, but it's kula b'isur, and therefore you're not going to generate this 5 times that you're going to be chayav for, and that you could split up 50-50 and say, oh, you're chayav for that 50, not this 50. As well as the fact that when it comes to two thieves that steal, as far as his piece of it, he's shechting it with knowledge, but as far as his partners, he's doing it without the knowledge of his partner. He's basically stealing from him in that shechita, and therefore he can't deem that shechita to be a shechita that's kulo b'isur. And therefore, Rashi says that over here, you would not be chayav for the 50% of the 5 times, unlike the case where you stole from partners, and then after the fact admitted to one of them that got you out of 50% of the 5 times. The Gemara now asks, Bai Rabbi Yirmiya, Machra chutz mishloshim yom, the person sells it with the exception of 30 days, meaning that he says, I'm going to sell it to you, but the first 30 days it's going to be mine. Chutz mimelachta, he sells it, he says, listen, Rashi, the way Rashi terms it is that he says, listen, if you want to shecht it, you can shecht it. You keep it around and do work with it, it belongs to me. All work that it does, you're going to pay me for. But if you want to shecht it, you have permission to do that any time. Chutz mi ubra, he sells it with the exception of the fetus. Mahu, what is the din in all these cases? Are these considered to be residuals in the sale to the point where it's not considered to be a mechira? There are Rishonim that point out that they think that this is an imtim salomar, meaning that each one of these is a step. If you want to say by shloshim yom, it's considered to be a shiur. If he says chutz mi melachta, is that a shiur? And if you say chutz melachta is a shiur, then it's chutz mi ubra a shiur. Anybody who says that a fetus is an extension of the mother, it's as if he's the thigh of the mother, then there's no question, then he definitely left a residual in the mother because the fetus is just an extension of the mother. If he didn't sell the fetus, then he has a portion of the mother that he still owns. The question really only comes up for the one who thinks that a fetus is a separate entity from the mother. My. Mema amrinan came into mechubar ba havishiur. Do we say since they are attached, and that's not just the physical attachment, but the mother is sustaining the fetus, and therefore they are integrally attached, and for that reason, if you keep the ubar, that is a residual in the mother. Well, dimon came into mifrash minakoi. In the end, the baby or the fetus will separate from the mother. Lavishiur, that's not considered to be residual because the end game here, or in the final say, this fetus is going to separate from the mother. Ikadamre, some pose the question in the following way, which is, Kaven de lav yerechimahu, lo avishiur. Do we say because it's not an extension of the mother, therefore it's not considered to be a shiur? Oduma, Kaven de sterech lishtiruye bahadab shchita, command the shir begufa domi. Or maybe because if you shech the mother, the baby depends on that shchita to be mutar ve'achila. And so then the fetus has a certain amount of dependence on the mother, not just for sustenance, but in a halachic sense, there's a dependence on the mother, because if you shech the mother, that'll be matir, the baby. And so therefore, there is this connection between them, and if you leave it over, you leave a residual, that would be considered a shiur in the sale. Teku, we leave that all as unresolved. Bayra papa, ganva kita'a umichara mahu. If he steals it, after he steals it, he maims it, he cuts off a leg, and then sells it. Do we say that what he stole, he didn't sell because he removed the part before he sold it? So he didn't sell everything that he stole, unlike the cases before where the animal already had the defect beforehand. Here, the defect was created by the ganav, and then he sells it. Now, obviously, over here, the tia that he does has to be not so significant in order to make it into a shinui maaseh. Because if there's a shinui maaseh in the behema, then he's kona the behema, and then it becomes his behema, and then it's shalom mocher and shalom toveach. So what you have to say here is that it's a shinui that is not significant enough to make it a shinui maise, but it's significant enough that there's a difference between what he stole and what he is selling. Odoma madazavin haloshir. Or they say whatever he sold, he left nothing over in that sale. Therefore, it should not be considered a problem, and it should be a sale that would be mechayev im arba v'chamisha. Once again, it's a teiko, unresolved issue. Rav Chanan Wasserman, the Kibbutz Shiurim over here, says that the etzema safek of the Gemara over here is what is the determinant for what he has to sell. does he have to sell what he stole? Meaning at the moment that he stole, we look at everything that's there and he has to sell the entirety of what he stole? Or do we look at the moment of sale, do we have to sell everything that is available to be sold at that moment? What is the determining point in determining the threshold of what is called a complete sale? Is it the moment of the gneva or the moment of the mechira? Tan Rabbanan, ganav v'natan la'acher. He steals it and then gives it to someone else. Not gifting it, but gives it to them, v'tavach. And that person shechs it. Ganav v'natan la'acher u'machar. He steals it and gives it to another person, and that person goes ahead and sells it. Ganav v'higdish. If he steals it and then is makdish it. Ganav v'hikif. He goes ahead and he steals it, and then he sells it on credit. Ganav v'chlif. He goes ahead and he steals it, and then he barters it for something else. Ganav v'natan b'matana. He steals it and then gifts it to someone else. Ganav upara chuvo. If he steals it and then uses it to pay back outstanding debts, ganav upara b'akefo, or he stole it and uses it to pay down credit that was extended to him, ganav shalach siblonot b'beit chaviv, or he stole it and then sends it as a gift for his engagement present, v'shaleim tashlumei arba'a v'chamishan. All these instances he's going to pay 4 or 5 times. It says, Maikam Ashman, what's the chiddush of this brayta? Ashmin and Reisha, the Reisha teaches us, ganav v'natan l'acher v'tavach, d'yesh shliach l'dvar aveira. The fact that he gave it to another party, and that party sold it, or he gave it to another party, and that party shechted it, they are acting on his behalf. Since they're acting on his behalf, they become shlichim, his agents, and even though it's a dvar aveira, there is shliach l'dvar aveira when it comes to mechira and tbicha. Afagav d'b'chol ha'turah kula, ain't shliach l'dvar aveira. Even though anywhere else in the Torah there's no din of shliach l'dvar aveira, hocha yeh shliach l'dvar aveira. Over here, there is a din of shliach l'dvar aveira, my taima, because it says, utvacho imicharo, ma mechira do lefshar delava yedei acher. Just like a sale requires 2 parties, it requires a seller and a buyer, so too, af tvicha yedei acher, so too, tvicha, you will be chayev, even if it's done with another party involved. Even if it's done with another party involved, you will be chayav. So there is shliach l'dvar aveira. This is one of the exceptions, like me'ilah, to the rule of shliach l'dvar aveira. We already saw this. Either this is the limud, or there were 2 other limudim there in the Gemara from the word o, or from the word tachat, that those are ribuim that teach that there is shliach l'dvar aveira. Rashminan seifa, the latter half of the breita, as the case in the mirror, it says, ganav v'higdish, if he steals it and he's makdish it, mali micharo l'hejot, mali micharo l'shamayim. What's the difference if he sells it to a layperson or if he sells it to Hekdesh? Now, this is very difficult in the Gemara because we just finished up a Gemara that told us that when you're makdish something to the Mizbeach, that we do not say Mali Micharo L'Shamayim, because beforehand it was Torah D'Ruvain, and afterwards it's Torah D'Ruvain. Beforehand it was his shor, afterwards it's his olah, and his name is retained on the animal, and therefore it's not considered to be a Mechira when you're makdish something. So how do you explain the bright over here that says that when you're makdish it, it is equivalent of mechira? So the Bali HaTosafot back there, as we explained, said that that din is only by Kodshei Mizbeach. But by Kodshei Berek Habayit, your name does not stay with the Kodshei Berek Habayit. And therefore, Tosafot says over here, the bright is talking about Kodshei Berek Habayit. The Lo Sheri Leach Lameimar Mi'ikara Torah D'Ruvein Mahashta Torah D'Ruvein, because that din does not apply by Kodshei Berek Habayit. By Kodshei Shamayim, the name of the Baalim stays associated with the animal. Then by Kodshei Berek Habayit, it transfers to Hekdesh completely. The name of the individual who donated it is totally severed from the item, and therefore it is considered a Mechira, or it is considered to be something that change of ownership that we Mechayev you, Arba V'Chamisha, with regards to Hekdesh. Right, so Tosfot over here says something along those lines, which is, Tosfot over here says, why didn't then the Gemara ask before, Liflog v'litnei b'tida? Why does the Mishnah separate between a case where he was ganav, hikdish, and then tavachu machar, versus a case where he's ganav, tavachu machar, and then makdish? How come the Gemara changed the order? You could have liflog v'litnei b'tida. When is that true by Kodshei Mizbeach? Over there it's not considered to be a mechira. But if it's Kodshei Berek Habayit, then it would be a mechira. Why didn't the Mishnah differentiate in that manner? It could have made a finer distinction. The Gemara asked that with regards to other cases where it wanted to try to explain the Mishnah in that manner, and then it says, well, if that's the case, it should have made a finer distinction. Tosafot says something along the lines of what you're saying, which is, he says that stam k'dushat shor v'sed mi'chayim ha'viyu l'mizbeach. The default status of an animal that is alive is that it's going to the mizbeach. And therefore, the Mishnah does not want to create a differentiation between kosher mizbeach and kosher berek habayit, because the natural state or outcome of an animal that is alive is that it's going on the mizbeach. And therefore, to make a distinction between kosher mizbeach and kosher berek habayit, when you're talking about live animals, that doesn't make any sense. Now, if the animal is dead or the item is not throughout with the mizbeach, then stam it would be for berek habayit. So since there is a default status in these situations, it would not be a simple distinction to draw between kosher mizbeach and kosher berek habayit. Because generally, when you deal with items, they are either going to be kosher mizbeach or they're going to be kosher berek habayit. It's not usually a case where they can be both, or either or, whether they can be a kosher mizbeach or kosher berek habayit. And for that reason, the Gemara doesn't feel comfortable or understands why the Mishnah would not make such a distinction, even though such a distinction does exist. If you remember from the Gemara over there, the Tosfot Ari disagreed with the Tosafot and says there is no distinction between kosher mizbeach and kosher berek habayit. Therefore, according to them, you're going to have to say that this braita is cholek on that Gemara, and this braita is not the halacha. As far as the other cases in the braita, what you have to say is that the chiddush in each of these cases is that it's still deemed to be a sale. By a matana, a gift, even though it's a gift and there's no money or consideration given in return, it's still considered to be a mechira. The Ravid over here mentions the fact that the reason here matana is considered to be mechira, even though in other areas of halacha it's not, is because the reason why mechira, you're chayav v'dalei, hey, the Gemara said before, is because shenishtarei shvachet. Because you are deep in the sin, whether that's because you're doing two sins or you're continuing to do the sin, whatever we explained back then, but that's also applicable by a matana. With regards to the debts and the credit, all of those do not involve a cash exchange, so you might have thought that they're not considered to be a mechira. And with regards to the gifts to his future wife, even though mashakana isha kana bala, here she's not a full-fledged wife to him yet, and therefore it's not considered as if he's handing it from his left hand to his right hand, but rather it is still considered to be a gift that will generate the equivalence of a mechira. All right, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Ted Amud Aleph.